Introducing Steve Forbes is easy. The first family of free enterprise, wasn't that? Isn't that the Forbes family? Is it?
Well, that sounds great. I won't object to that.
We go back a long way. You remember I was a guy that kept telling you to run for president. You remember that?
I blame you. Yes.
Well, blame me? No. I wish you were in there now. Tell me how this thing is going to unfold.
Well, you have to approach it with humility. No one could have scripted what is going on here. Everyone focuses on the Republican side, but you look at the Democrat side, this guy Bernie Sanders, self-proclaimed socialist. I mean, he calls himself that.
I know, you'd think he would dodge it. He wants you to know him as a socialist.
And when he runs in Vermont, you know, it's Republican, Democrat, socialist. And to show how far left this man is, when he got married during the Cold War back in the 1980s, he went on his honeymoon to Moscow, a drab, dreary city. This is before the fall of the Berlin Wall. He wasn't kidnapped. He voluntarily went to Moscow with his bride, some other junky cities around Moscow. I mean, in New York, we have a mayor named Bill de Blasio. We call him Bolshevik Bill. And
I know who the mayor is.
And when he went on his honeymoon, at least he went to Havana, where the weather is warm. You got beaches. But with Sanders went to Moscow.
Well, but what are they trying to? What's the
message? What the message is, people are deeply disaffected with the political establishment of both parties. They feel the country is adrift. They feel the world is falling apart, which will be underscored by what happened in Paris, that people in charge don't know what they're doing, or if they do know, they don't know how to do it. And so when it's like being on an airplane, if the pilot you feel doesn't know what he's doing, or you're on a ship where the captain doesn't know what's going on, it's pretty scary. So people are attracted to outsiders. You take Donald Trump, no one pays attention to his policy proposals. They like the idea, they know him from TV, they like the idea that he can kick butt, that he tells people off, and by golly, they feel that what needs to be done, shake things up.
As far as they're concerned, they don't, the guy looking at the television, doesn't realize that he's filed for bankruptcy four times.
And when that's brought out, he just brushes it off as a good business tactics. And
that's what he said. He said it's part of the system. I do not know anybody that has been had four bankruptcies.
Oh, he'll tell you it's not personal.
Oh, I know, but it's still, I mean, those are here.
I know. And, you know, any business, energy business, my business, if you go once, you think, boy, that's pretty bad. I got to really claw back. But the rules don't apply to him. He's the one person where the rules don't apply.
It's pretty interesting, though. Are you saying he's getting away with something? I don't know. Maybe that's what the American people want. I know they want something different than what they've had. They're fed up with that.
Yep.
But let's flip back to Bernie and the Democrats for just a second. That is a party, you know, growing up and everything, it was a party for the young people.
Yes.
Do you remember? And John Kennedy.
And strong defense.
Strong defense. And John Kennedy came along, 43 years old. This is the future. This is, you know, Camelot, all the hoopla. This party now, look who runs, Harry Reid.
They're all on Social Security.
Harry Reid.
The Party of Youth is one of the leaders
Pelosi,
are Social Security.
And Hillary Clinton, that is a party of youth.
Yeah.
What? Now, flip over to the Republicans. I'm not sure what the Republicans is a party of right now. They've got a lot more. They're a lot more attractive as to what the team looks like. You look at all those people up there trying to run for president. It's pretty interesting, and you know they're articulate, they're qualified. They aren't up there like Bernie Sanders.
No.
And
what's encouraging, take away the reality TV gloss to it, is that they've all come up with plans to radically simplify the tax code. So that's encouraging. They're all strong except for one on national defense. That's encouraging. And so I think, and on health care, they all know the current plan's got to go. So beneath all the hoopla, I think some substantive things are getting out there, especially on the tax side.
And you were big. I mean, you're a big guy for changing the taxes. You wanted a flat tax. My God, how long ago was that? 20 years ago?
20 years ago.
Yeah.
30 countries have done it since, but not the U.S. yet.
What we have is impossible, yet we have it.
And it gets worse. Yep. 6 billion hours a year filling out tax forms.
Costs. The way you're saying, that does employ some people.
Well, think of it this way. Think of it this way. If you take that $6 billion plus the $300 billion we spend complying with this monster, do it over 20 years. Think if all those billions of hours, hundreds of billions, trillions of dollars had been instead devoted to new products and services, new medical devices, new medicines, how much better life would be if that brain power and that capital had been productively used instead of the stupid tax code?
Well, you employ a lot of accountants.
Well, they could become Uber drivers, you know.
And you also, you know, there are a lot of tax lawyers. And when it gets complicated, they got to bring a lawyer in. I never did quite figure that out.
Imagine if they'd been doing instead medical research.
Well, I understand. I can't argue with you on it.
They defended fiercely. When I ran 20 years ago in the New Hampshire primary, H&R Block actually did a mailing to the voters in New Hampshire warning of the impending end of civilization. We got tax simplification.
Well, sure, because they're selling it.
They did it with a straight face.
The tax code is perfect for them.
Absolutely.
It was money was rolling in big. Okay, you made a speech at Notre Dame and said capitalism was in the human mind. Give me two or three minutes on that.
Well, take the industry you're in. Oil. They call oil a natural resource. It's not a natural resource in and of itself. It's just goo. It's glop. You can't eat it or drink it or feed it to camels. But what made that essential in modern economy is the human mind.
They turned it into something.
Absolutely. And that's what it is. People take things that look like there's nothing there, and they make something. Take silicon, you know, the chips, sand. Whoever throwing your kid on the beach. This was going to put the world at your fingertips. And technology being what it is, we get spoiled by it. So if it takes more than 10 seconds to reach Outer Mongolia, we say, what a piece of crap this device is. Look at all the seconds it takes. But it's a miracle. That's the human mind.
Well, and we promote that in this country better than anybody else. But back to capitalism.
Well, and part of capitalism is the mind, and part of the mind is having property rights, being able to take something and develop it. As you've pointed out, one advantage this country's always had with minerals is this is the one country in the world where individuals can own what's below the ground. And
it's normal. I mean, it's routine.
We take it as a routine.
Sure we do. I mean, that you buy your home, you get everything below the home wherever you go to in the center of the earth.
I mean, well, you take energy. I mean, our topography is no different from Mexico's, but in Mexico, if you discover oil in your backyard, who gets it? Pemex.
Sure.
Not you.
But around the world, you do have some ownership, Southeast Alberta, in Southwest Saskatchewan, in that area in there. There's some freehold minerals is what they're called. But you know, to show what ownership by individuals causes to happen, there have been over 5 million wells drilled in the world today. And guess what? Over half of them were drilled in the United States. I mean, the United States is like that, you know, compared to the world, and over half the wells have been drilled in the United States. And guess who has the most oil and gas in the world, the United States. Now, we had to get pretty clever, but just like you said, in the human mind came horizontal drilling.
Absolutely.
And fracking 40, 50 times in a horizontal hole that's 2 miles long.
Well, as you know, wells that we thought were dry with this technology, lo and behold, it's like a resurrection.
It is. Absolutely a resurrection. And and you look at West Texas. I'm a geologist, so I think back millions. You know, I'm getting damn old, so I'm starting to fit with geologic thinking.
There's human time and geology time.
Right. But there, you've produced 40 billion barrels of oil out of West Texas.
That's amazing.
In the Permian Basin. Okay. That's about what you produced out of the Gulf of Mexico. And now the West Texas has got, guess what, another 50 to 100 billion barrels of oil caused by horizontal drilling and fracking. And that's like discovering another West Texas. And it was discovered in the last 5 or 10 years. And we are getting better all the time on how we recover. But you know, the Forbes have always promoted, we opened up with that and said, and I remember your dad had an airplane called Capital Tool.
Capitalist Tool. Yeah. He was not bashful about it.
No, but I remember seeing that one time at an airport, and I thought, well, what in the hell is that? And it was Malcolm Forbes' airplane, is what it was.
Yeah. Gold and money green.
Yeah, it was. It was green. I remember the airplane was green. Well, okay, let's bring it to a conclusion with the opening question. How is this thing going to turn out?
Well, on the Republican side, we're going to go into a very interesting phase now. Senator Rubio and Senator Cruz are rising up. Mm-hmm. They've done well in the debates. Jeb Bush.
Can you imagine, excuse me for interrupting, can you imagine old Cruz, how quick his mind was the other day, those questions were asked.
Amazing.
It was amazing, and that guy came back and...
And he knew all the questions. Boom. Yes, I know. Bush this. Yes, him that.
He didn't
yes,
miss one. And he looked at the moderators who were pretty...
Outclassed.
Pretty pathetic. And he said, you wasted the time asking, you know, these questions. Knew every one of them came out. I thought, this isn't scripted. This guy didn't do this yesterday. He did it standing up there on that stage. Pretty impressive.
It is, and it goes to show that even if he doesn't get the nomination, the next president should put him on the Supreme Court with a mind like that. He's got the best constitutional mind. The professor at Princeton, a conservative one, and the few there, said he's one of the best students he ever had in constitutional law. This guy's brilliant.
I didn't know that, but I agree. I think he's a very, very smart man. And
To the Democrats? Oh, my goodness.
The Democrat, honestly, was like a comedy show. Hillary and Bernie and poor old Webb. He let me talk. And then he let him talk. He forgot what he was going to say.
Wrong party.
Okay, so you're saying, and I agree with you, that Rubio and Cruz have moved up and are above the crowd now with the other two guys.
and then you have to still see if Christie, who did very well in the undercard debate, very well, especially now people are focusing on national security. So I think he'll be rising up, and we'll see if Bush can rise up, and then Carly
Bush
Fiorina.
Has all the credentials. And
yes, he's an outstanding governor.
And he's ready to go, except, you know, he looks like he's running in wet cement. You know what I mean? He's slogging. He's not up moving, and he has the credentials.
Yes.
And so maybe he does. And you say, well, there's a long time till next November. Hey, there's going to be a lot happen long before November. We know that. And you're into that, state, Iowa, you're into that, in February?
February, you've got Iowa. Then 8 days later, you have the New Hampshire primary. Then you have South Carolina and Nevada. And then in March, it's Tuesday.
Yeah, Super Tuesday.
So, you know, it really picks up the pace.
It's going to, first one in February, okay, November's gone. So you got December, January. You're talking about 60, 75 days from now. The whole thing's going. But, okay, and we have, between us, have figured out, but really we came up with the same answer, that something will have to happen to Trump and Carson.
Well, that's why I said humility's in order, because I couldn't have scripted this. You couldn't have.
No,
no one could have. And Donald Trump, we'll see. He's held his own in the debate so far, but we've got one in mid-December, and then we have a couple more in January.
We have eight or something like that.
Yeah. So this is the thing to keep in mind. It's fluid. Nothing is carved in stone.
You know, I hear people say that, well, Republicans made a mistake to have so many debates. I haven't decided whether that's a good statement or not. I don't find anything wrong with the debates. I'm getting to know these people.
That's what people want.
Yeah.
And that's why it's not one debate. It's a series. What impression? First few debates, you just want people to say, I want to know more about this person.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Cruz and Rubio are starting to rise up. People are saying, maybe there's something there.
They're watching it. People are watching it.
Millions.
Yeah.
Millions.
They are. And I do believe the Republican, whoever the nominee is, will beat Hillary.
I think you're right.
I think the American people see Hillary for what Hillary is, which is a person that is not honest. And I used to say any politician that's ever found out to be dishonest is dead in the water. Well, I was wrong. But that was 30 years ago. A lot has happened. There's some liars that get away with it.
But I think people are so desirous of change. They know what's happening in the world is profoundly wrong. They know what's happened to the economy is not the American way. It's like 1980. People want a big change.
That was our guy.
Yes.
But
absolutely.
When do we get another one of those guys?
Well, Reagan wasn't Reagan until after he became president.
That's right. I mean, if you go back and look at his resume, it wasn't that impressive. But when he got there, you found out it started to unfold. He moved quickly, mentally, to grasp the enormity of the whole job. And then he he got some support in there to him that could give him a lot of information quick, and he was able to manage it. But that's what a leader is.
Well, that's what Lincoln did. He brought his rivals in, kept them close in, to his cabinet. He had enough confidence. I can handle these people. They can contribute. We got to get united, and he did it.
He did it. You said Lincoln, and you have Reagan. These people don't come along very often.
No, but what they do is they set a template so that you don't have to be a Lincoln or a Reagan to see what the principles are. That's what's starting to percolate again in the Republican Party. What are the principles that make this country great? And that's what's starting to come out. You see it on the tax side. You see it in some of these health proposals. You see it in strong defense.
Something has got to happen, though, Steve. I mean, yes, taxes and strong defense and everything. But we got to get somebody in there that causes it to happen.
And that's what I think will happen in the next few months. People begin to...
You think we're going to get a person in that position?
Yeah, people say, okay, this guy can... We think he can do it. Let's go with it.
Yeah, let's talk about global. And when I look around for leaders, I'm only seeing one standing. I see Putin, the Russian. But I think, to me, the guy's cool. And he's got a lousy country, no economy. The only assets I have are oil and gas. It's just a sad, sad deal. People getting old. Now, what do you have? He gets invited back into the Mideast. He's back into Syria. He was kicked out when? In 73?
73. Sadat kicked them out. And thanks.
Well, did not him, but Russia.
Sadat Stalin. Kicked the Russians out.
Yeah.
And Putin knows, like a good gambler, even though he has a weak hand, he knows how to play it. He's sized up his opponent. He realizes Obama is an isolationist, wants to withdraw from the world, thinks America's bad in the world. So Putin's taken full advantage of it. Sadly, so are terrorists. They don't think the U.S. has got the backbone anymore to resist. We'll do some bombing raids from time to time, but our heart's not in it. And so we see the horrors in Paris, where there are going to be other horrors coming. And so I think that's one reason why the American people want a real change, just as they saw in the late 70s when the then Soviet Union was rampaging in the world. The communists were taking over in Latin and Central
and
America.
Military was going down.
Military was on food stamps, and Russia was invading Afghanistan, and it looked like the world was falling apart. We see the same thing today. The American people know it, and that's what they, disturbs them. They want that to change.
Well, let me, I'm agreeing with you. That's dangerous for you and I, too, because we usually agree on most things because we think the same way. I mean, we're Americans and we're capitalists. But let me go to this point. Putin now is in Syria. Well, that's right there. And now, let's say, I'm not talking about OPEC, but I'm talking about some of the countries that are in OPEC, which is the Mideast. Not all of OPEC, because that's Nigeria and Venezuela and everything else. But here, you take the oil in the Mideast, and you take the Russian oil, that's 10 million barrels a day, so they've got oil. And put those two together, and you have half the oil in the world.
That's what Putin sees, and that's what Iran sees. That's why Iran is working with Putin. Iran wants to be the dominant power in the Middle East and figures Russia can help them do it, undermine the Saudis, virtually take over the oil fields in Iraq. They already have the Iranian oil fields. Mm-hmm. Gulf states they figure they can envelop, and it's an ugly situation.
And it's ugly to who? It would be ugly
civilization.
To
Europe.
Right.
Very ugly.
And of course to us and all, but we pulled out and created a vacuum for
vacuums
him.
Vacuums are always filled. Yep. In this case, the bad guys are filling it.
And the now, you had oil come down from $100 to $40 today. Who did it hurt? It hurt the American oil and gas producers. They're not a very big crowd, and they don't have many friends in the overall scheme of things. So it hurt the United States producer, but it helped the U.S. economy. It was like a shot in the arm to the U.S. economy. It was cheaper gasoline. And then who else did it hurt? It sure hurt the Russians. The Saudis, it's costing them $500 million a day. They produce 10 million barrels of oil, so does Russia, so it costs them $500 million a day, too, is what it what it's costing.
All the more reason why they want to get control.
And all the more reason they want the price to come up.
Yes.
And you got Iran is always wants money. Don't worry about Iran putting a lot of oil into the market. You know, when their sanctions are lifted, I don't believe that oil is there. You can't be off production as long as they have. You got to do remedial work. You've got to do drilling. There has to be activity. They haven't had activity. So they say a million barrels will come back on like that. No, maybe 200,000 max. So it's not going to flood the world with oil when the Iranian production is lifted. So, but I do think that Putin is in there for a reason, and he does have a plan.
Yes. And our president is seen as sadly as indecisive, weak. That's why the Chinese moved in the South China Sea. Mm-hmm. That's why Putin moved. And when you...
And you gave up the Keystone Pipeline.
Keystone Pipeline, but when you let change come, not let change, but when you encourage regime change in Libya, you try to get it in Syria, and then you don't follow through, the bad guys come in.
And they have.
And you precipitously withdraw from Iraq, as this guy did 5 years ago, highway for Iran to go into Syria, and you have the horrors unfolding there. You can't wash your hands of the world. You don't can't make the world in your image.
Well, we made a mistake.
And you can't withdraw. You've got to have something in between, like Reagan had.
Well, see if we agree on this one. We made a mistake going into Iraq.
Well, probably looking when Jeb Bush was asked, looking back with all what we know since, would you go on in Iraq? What he should have said is, should have gone against Iran, the source of terror.
Right.
Go to Central.
But we shouldn't have gone into Iraq. The guy was a bad guy, no question about that.
Well,
they found out when
he would have he would have been ousted after we got took care of Iran.
But what I tried to get them to do at the White House was to get something for the 7,000 people killed, the 31,000 injured, and the $1 trillion that we spent over there. What? I said, get a call on their oil. They said, well, it'll look like we went in for the oil. And I said, no, we just a call on it at market price. So Iraq doesn't have to pay anything. I said, they'll be more than happy to give us a call on their oil at market price. They
market
didn't have
price
any.
Price is the key.
Okay, but guess what? We got zero. And guess who took most of the oil in the Iraqi deal? Now they have to drill for it, pay for it, and everything else. They don't get it free. But you know who it is? China. And they didn't pay anything. They didn't lose a person. They didn't pay for the war. They didn't do anything except just wait and step in there. And now they're drilling with BP and others to the oil there. But China ends up with the oil. And it seemed like we were just too good of guys is what it is.
Well, those poker tournaments you see on TV, you would not want Barack Obama and the State Department playing in those tournaments.
Oh, no, you wouldn't even want them hanging around the casino. So I'd pick their pocket. Okay, well, thanks.
Good. Thank you, Boone.
Sure.